Well, guys, you're in for a treat, or the weirdest podcast you've ever listened to. I thought it would be fun to bring my dear friend Asan onto the show to chat. Those of you who have been to a Rise conference before know Asan as Asan the DJ, and you have danced to his music, you've laughed at his jokes, you know that he is as much a part of the structure of one of our events as I am. And as we prepare for tour, which we kick off in about 3 weeks now, thought it would be fun to have him come on and chat and catch up and talk about the shows and what we're putting together. But even more than that, I just thought it'd be cool to bring on my friend and have a real conversation. So it isn't an interview, it's a chat. And it's very much the exact kind of conversation that Asan and I have when we're together, which goes all over the place. We talk about breaking up with someone. We talk about social constructs like marriage or believing that you have to go to college or whatever other ideology that we buy into because it's the way that we were raised. We talk about unconscious bias and how it's written into the algorithm and the code. And we do, yes, absolutely get into a conversation about simulation theory. All of that happens before we actually remember to talk about tour. So if you want to hear us chat about anything and everything, this is the episode to listen to while you do something else. But this is my chat with Asan, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed getting to catch up with my friend. Hi, I'm Rachel Hollis, and this is my podcast. I spend so many hours of every single week reading and listening to podcasts and watching YouTube videos and trying to find out as much as I can about the world around me. And that's what we do on this show. We talk about everything, life and how to be an entrepreneur. What happened to dinosaurs? What's the best recipe for fried chicken? What's the best plan for intermittent fasting? What's going on with our inner child? How's therapy working out for you? Whatever it is my guests are into, I want to unpack it so that we can all understand. These are conversations. This is information for the curious. This is the Rachel Hollis Podcast. The intention behind wanting to have a tour in the first place, which is that I personally am missing community. I'm missing community. And so I figure if I'm missing community, then maybe other people are as well.
Yeah.
And there's like the most amazing connection happens not when you meet someone and you're like, oh, you look like me, you think like me, you vote like me, but when you meet someone that you're like, oh, you too.
Yeah.
Like you're also doing this thing that I'm trying to do. You're also dreaming of this other, you're also like kind of not sure what to do with your life now. You're also, it, you know, what is it? C.S. Lewis, the most powerful words in the English language are me too.
Yeah.
And I think that when you get together in a community and you find people that have similarities to you, it, number one, it makes you feel not so alone, but it also means that, I don't know, I feel like it gives you like such a boost. It gives you power. You're like, okay, hell yeah, let's do this. Now you have someone you can call when it's hard. It's like as a parent of a toddler, then you meet another mom who's a parent of a toddler. You're like, oh girl, call me if you start crying over potty training. Like I'll get you. It's incredible when you think about the fact that we did – I want to say this for people who are listening who may not know this. I'll do an intro so that they know who you are.
Gotcha.
But you and Jack, so the three of us on this call, are the have been at every Rise conference since the very first one.
Check this out. Which is, I still got my my water bottle.
Oh, I love that bottle. That's so cool. I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible to think, you know, 2017. We have this crazy idea to do this event. Sammy and I are on an airplane. We're talking about literally the idea was we all went to the same church. And I'm not sure if everybody knows this story, but we all went to the same church. And Sammy and I really wanted to throw an event that was not based in faith. because we were like, well, we have incredible community in our church and we get to come together and have dinners and go to events and do all these things as a group. But what does it look like if you're not part of our church? What if you're Muslim? What if you're Jewish? What if you're atheist? And maybe you wouldn't feel comfortable coming into a space that has a religious, you know, foundation.
Sure,
so we wanted to create a space that felt like, you said, like that agape love, that felt like that community and that sense of fun and that connection, but it didn't matter who you were, what you believed in, what you looked like, you were welcome here.
Yeah.
And so we literally, on that first plane ride, Sammy was like, maybe we could get a song. And I didn't even know you. You were the drummer. Like, that's how I was like, the drummer is a DJ? And it's so funny because from the very first event, that sort of back and forth between the two of us like became that foundation of the event, which if you've been to a Rise conference before, you know what we're talking about and you know who Hassan is. And they're probably tripping out right now to like hear like how we philosophize.
Talking about simulation theory.
Simulation theory. I mean, I think it's incredible to imagine how far it's come. And like, here we are now for the first time going to different cities and trying this new experiment. I'm so excited. And it really is because like, it's that community thing. You know, we sent out an email because for each city, we were looking for a couple volunteers. Literally, we just want people to greet. Like when you come in the door, we want you, you know, someone who's going to love on the women who are coming in, the women and like the three dudes that those women dragged along to the event. We wanted people who could like love on them and like say hello and make them feel comfortable. You know how we do. And so we had sent out this call for volunteers. And not only did we get such an incredible response, but it's like our volunteers who have volunteered at every event we've ever, you know, it's so the cool. same women. And they like bought a ticket to the event, but still want to volunteer. So I'm so excited. Are you feeling excited? How are you feeling about tour?
I am super excited. I think there's something truly special about like those spaces that you help to curate. Like, I think the experiences that happen there are like crazy. Like they're so dope. Like, it's so beautiful. The energy of it is like unmatched. Like it truly is like the vision that you set out with Sammy on the plane, like truly came to fruition. Like there's like, the energy is unmatched. Like everyone coming together from different walks of life and stuff like that. And I think it's important to go to these cities where like, cause I think of these cities all the time where like just people who are, you know, from a smaller town who don't run into a lot of people who are very different from them, coming together at a place where they're going to experience people either who have flown in from other places or what you offer, even people that are somewhat close to them, but they're all attracted to the space that you're curating. And so they're all gathering around this like mutual interest of like of this experience. And I think it's so cool to have those people have a chance to meet each other and to become friends and to do all that. Like, it's beautiful. Like, there's not a lot of intentional opportunities to do that are fun and that are also like especially geared for a like a female audience, like that we need more of that. Like, I think that's so cool. It's so
we have so much fun, and I think it's worth asking because people who haven't been to an event before, they see the video of like everybody dancing, everybody jumping up, and they're like, what the hell is going on at this event? Like, why are these people? And I know it might seem weird to combine like dancing to Beyonce and personal development, but it really works.
Of course.
One, because it makes it fun. Two, because it keeps your energy up. And when your energy's up, you're so much more prone to like belief in yourself, having courage, talking to a stranger, the whole thing. But we also, that was just us. We just wanted to have a good time. We wanted to play music. We wanted to joke around. We want people to laugh. We want people to cry. Like, it's the full spectrum of everything. So I think if there is one misconception about the events that we throw, it's that they see people dancing in their like seats or jumping up and down. And they're like, oh, what are these? Bro, Hassan's just playing something sick and people want to move and it works. It's just a vibe. It's a party, but it's also teaching and connecting. And I'm so excited. Okay. And I have an idea.
Yeah. Let's do it.
I have an idea that I want to hear your thoughts on slash okay. present to the community for the first time. So for as long as we've done these events, we've always had a handful of songs that are like our songs. So like classic mm-hmm. is the Macklemore song. We've danced to that song at every single Rise conference we've ever done. And of course it's going to like, we have to, because, yeah. you know, this is our thing. This is my song choice. I love it. But I thought, wouldn't it be so fun mm-hmm. if you and I came up with like six songs or seven songs, I don't know, that were, that pump you up, that make you feel empowered. You know, this is your expertise, so I'll let you dream on this. But at every single city stop, we let the audience choose their theme song for the night.
That'd be great.
So we're like, Birmingham, okay, here's what's up. Asan is going to play you a sample of seven different songs, and based on applause, y'all are going to choose your theme song. Because what we know, having been to an event, is that those songs become a part of your psyche. Mm-hmm. When you have an emotional experience, when you set a goal, when you get energized and a song's playing, for the rest of your life, that song comes on and you're like, okay, let's 100%. Go.
100%.
So, yeah, I thought that would be cool if each city got to pick their own theme song. And then wouldn't it be interesting, like, oh, Birmingham went old school. They wanted, like, 90s hip-hop. And mm-hmm. Charleston was all about something from today. And mm-hmm. these three cities picked Beyonce because she's a queen and whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's think on that. Let's think on what songs we could present to everybody. Because I feel like that'll be a fun moment at the start of the show to, like, hype people up. Mm-hmm. Is like, what's your jam? We have to have a full spectrum. Like, we've got to have something older. We have to be able to find out, like, regionally, like, what was the number one song in Alabama of the 90s or something. Okay. You know what I mean?
We need to research.
I mean, I don't know how it works. Or maybe there's, like, you know, if there's a sports team that's really popular nearby and they have, like, a song. Because it'd be great to remember when we were in Toronto and we did the like the best of Canadians and we just played all Canadian artists. For like
the
an
amount
hour.
Of love for Nickelback in Toronto was
you
crazy.
Are so right. Like, no offense to our Canadian brethren and sisters. That was shocking.
Yeah.
That was shocking.
Yeah.
How, what, wasn't it like, look at this photograph? Mm-hmm. Those women lost their shit.
Yeah.
Like, they're still screaming. Who knew?
And not even screaming at Nickelback, the band on stage. Like, just literally me pressing play on a Nickelback song and they're losing their minds.
That was so funny.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I forgot about that. Oh, my word. You know, we got to give it up because...
I like Canada better.
Yeah, Canada had a lot of performers that I didn't even realize were Canadian. Yeah, they had, because you just kept going. I was like, certainly we've hit all. You were like, no, let's get Shania, let's get Bieber,
let's get Drake,
Mendes, let's get Drake.
The biggest artist in the world.
Is Canada. Drake the biggest artist in the world?
I think that is actually Bad Bunny right now. Bad Bunny's gigantic.
Okay, wait a minute. Are you a movie guy?
Yeah.
Do you like movies? Have you seen Bullet Train?
I have not yet. Is it good?
Asan, it's so good. And I didn't know Bad Bunny was in it.
Yeah.
It was a character. And then my son told me that that was Bad Bunny.
Yeah.
Okay, real quick, important for all listeners. Frankly, if you're still hanging after the conversation we had today, you're going to love Bullet Train too.
Exactly.
It's very like Tarantino vibes, not fully, but like Kill Bill. Just go, please go see it. I had never even heard of it. I just wanted to go to the movies. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to go to the movies. I wanted to have a cocktail. My kids were with their dad. I was like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. It's Brad Pitt. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm a 39-year-old woman. I'm not made of stone. It's Brad Pitt. It's so well done. I laughed. I cried. The action is phenomenal. And the writing is incredible. And it's like that guy's first screenplay ever. So screw him because it's too good to be the first thing that ever gets made of yours. So
that's crazy.
Oh, highly recommend.
Is this your favorite era of Brad Pitt? Do you have another favorite era of Brad Pitt?
I mean, Legend of the Fall. Mm-hmm. Into, you know what? I can't even choose because I was about to say into Fight Club. Those are two completely different eras. Remember Fight Club when he had that stomach? Come on. You know what? Can he do wrong? I don't think it's possible.
No, he's great.
He's never done anything wrong. I mean, I feel like that breakup with Angelina was maybe not the best. But in terms of movies. Oh, did you see Maverick? Did you see Top Gun?
Yeah, I totally did. Yeah.
How good was that?
So good. I've seen it twice. It's really good. I enjoyed it a lot, actually.
Can we look? Okay. Controversial topic. Controversial statement.
Yeah.
Fucking Tom Cruise.
He's a psycho in like the best way possible.
In the best way possible. Also, like, openly the leader of a very dangerous, hurtful cult. Like, everybody knows. Nobody's confused. They're probably going to, like, sue me for saying that. Everybody knows. And damn it, you're just like, he's too good.
Yeah.
He's too good.
He's real good at making, like, really good movies.
Yeah, and if you think about it, there was a long period of time where we didn't hear from Tom. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, okay, I'm just going to bring back Mission Impossible, but I'm going to do all my own stunts. And they're going to be so insane that you're just going to still love me. Like, he went crazy very publicly for a while. Like, remember he was jumping up and down on Oprah's stage and, like, Katie Holmes and the whole thing. And I was like, this man's insane. Mm-hmm. And here, I hate myself. Mm-hmm. But I saw Maverick and I was like, damn it. This is so good.
Yeah, it's when you like when I look at someone like Tom Cruise, like Scientology aside, like I look at someone like that and I'm like, I'm so glad he's using his like insanity for things that people enjoy. You know what I mean? Because he could totally be using his insanity to do all kinds of things. Like he could probably take over the world
that we know of. Yeah, we don't know. Behind the scenes, they could be using that level of obsession for all kinds of stuff. But that, honestly, Top Gun, it's real good. And who, again, the writing of being able to, like, have little nods and winks to the original movie, but also do something new and different and fresh. Ugh, so good. Hurts my feelings.
They let him, and let him is a stretch. But I like that he was old in this movie. Like, they let him be his age and not, like, pretend like he's, like, the young hotshot guy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they've been doing for so long.
And, honestly, his body looks phenomenal for the age that he is. But if you watch it again, please laugh with me in spirit at the scene on the beach where they're playing football.
Oh, my goodness.
Because his body, I give him credit. But if you watch that again, please note that every time it cuts to him, like anything below his nipples is in shadow.
Yeah.
It's in shadow. They're like, we are not getting tight on this.
Yeah.
We're not getting direct. Cut to Miles Teller, like dead light, like six-pack abs, looking young, looking hot. Back to Tom, shadow, like shadow for no reason. It's so funny how they cut that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, none of us want to say Tom Cruise's body looks good for a 60-year-old man.
Yeah.
We just all want to believe that Tom Cruise's body looks good for Tom Cruise.
Yeah. And so does Tom Cruise, for the record. Like, I think he'd be miserable if you said that he looks good for a 60-year-old.
Right. Well, also, is he 60 all of a sudden? I was like, maybe he's not that old.
He's probably close to that, I would imagine.
Man, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
That's got to be hard, though. Like, I couldn't imagine being someone like Tom Cruise or The Rock or like, basically any woman in Hollywood where, like, the pressure to look a certain way is so heavy on you from every direction. Like, I couldn't even imagine. Like, I'm sure you deal with that to a degree. Like, I'm sure there's, like, you feel some kind of pressure, like, to look a certain way, to present yourself a certain way. And like, I just couldn't do that.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts, Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. It's been a lot of growth and therapy and healing for me to believe that I could record this podcast with you and not be wearing makeup.
Yeah.
To believe that like I still have wisdom and value to offer the world and worth if I'm not with a full blowout and full makeup and all that stuff, because that's just how I came up believing that you were supposed to be. So I think that's still an unraveling that exists inside me that I'm actively working on. Mm-hmm. On the same token of like what it's like to be an actor or to be a celebrity or to be in that industry. Do you ever watch The Shop? LeBron James' show on HBO. It's like my favorite show ever. I've seen all the episodes.
It's a great show.
So good. I was watching the last season. Oh, I'm terrible with athletes. Is it Carmelo Anthony?
Carmelo Anthony. Yeah, he's a basketball player.
Okay,
great. Yeah.
Okay, yep, that sounds right. Mm-hmm. And the episode that he was on, there was him and then another, a woman who was in the WNBA.
Okay.
And they were talking about emotional health and mental health. And he was like, oh, I have a theory. Every professional athlete is depressed, period. Mm. Like, you will not convince me anything else.
Hmm.
And they were like, whoa, unpack that, explain. And he was like, you do, if you want to be the best, if you want to be in the upper echelon, if you want to do this work, you're going to do the same thing over and over and over every single day. You're going to do the same routine. You're going to eat the same things. You're going to go to the same place. You got to go to bed. You got to do. And if you work your hardest, if you stay in this routine that's monotonous, if you work your absolute hardest, if you win it all, the second you win, guess what? Tomorrow you got to wake up, you start doing that routine again because you got to be ready for next season.
Mm-hmm.
And he was explaining what that felt like. And I never thought, because every other athlete in that circle was like, as soon as he said it, they were all like, yep, that's the truth. This is not fun in the way people, like if you've ever seen that documentary of Tom Brady, his life looks terrible. And he's married to a supermodel. Like he just watches game tapes and eats salmon. Like it's the most monotonous, but that's what it is to be the best. And I guess we're gambling that like, what you think later in life that it'll pay off. And I'm not questioning it because they're way cooler than I am. But
well, sports is, and I think a lot of athletes are waking up to this, but sports is probably one of the most brutal industries. Even I would say even more so than Hollywood, because I feel like at least in Hollywood, there are still opportunities to create lasting value for people beyond what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. Like you can create something, you can go off and be in a movie tomorrow that changes the world forever. And so people stamp actors that they like with a much more lasting sort of transcendent form of value to them. And with athletes, it's much more about what are you doing for me right now? And the moment you leave a team and you're playing for a different team, no one likes you anymore. The moment you blow your knee out and can't play anymore, you're of zero value to the rest of the world. And like, sure, there are some athletes that have lasting legacies, but the bar for that amongst professional athletes is so high. Like you can be an actor and just have a small role in a commercial that like changes everything. Like I'm like Flo from Progressive or something like that. Like you can be that, like, and no shade to Flo because she's hilarious. Yeah. And like what they've built is like one of the best advertising campaigns of all time.
Yes.
But like you could be, you know, one of the greatest athletes in the world. And if you don't live up to a certain level of potential that completes the narrative that people have in their head about you, then like, you're of zero value. And so it's like, it's extremely brutal. Like it's, and a lot of athletes are waking up to that. There's a lot of earlier retirements than there have been before because people are getting the value that they would like out of professional sports. And then they're done because it's like, why continue to damage my body if like, it's not bringing the type of value that they want, you know?
Well, I think when you see those stories, like there's a documentary, it's incredible about Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, please watch it. So good. But you don't even understand. He's one example, but I never could have understood how destroyed his body is.
Oh, yeah. It's,
I mean,
it's nuts.
Brutalized. And he's not even a football player who's getting slammed into again and again and again. Uh-huh. And they're literally, these athletes are literally destroying their bodies in order to perform. And it's exactly what you said. The second that they stop being relevant, the second, nobody cares anymore. That nobody team cares. Doesn't care. Those fans don't care. What kind of crazy existence is this, like chasing worth, right? If I can just do the right thing, if I can just throw this touchdown, if I could just, but if something happens to you and you're hurt, you're screwed. It is so wild.
Yeah. You have to, I mean, that's why it's important to find internal sources of value and validation, because no matter what career you're in, if you're looking for it only externally, like, you're going to be let down. And I think athletes are just like a hyper version of that, like a hyper magnetized version of that, you know?
Yeah. It's so real too. The idea that we're taught societally that it's what's outside us. Yeah. It's how much money can you make? It's what's the new thing that you can buy? It's how do you look? It's who are your friends? Where do you live? All of those things. And it's all fake. The only thing, really, honestly, it's what's inside you. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's ever going to make you happy, whole, complete, content, any of those emotions that you're pursuing, it's always, always going to be what is inside yourself. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to hear that, because that's the hardest work there is to do. It's so much easier to have a drink. It's so much easier to go buy something that makes you feel good. It's so much easier to go spend time with a friend who's going to hype you up than it is to go meet with a therapist again this week and unpack your shit again this week. And it's slow. It's not fast. It's not, you know, it doesn't numb you. You got to feel every single second of it. But that's the only real, authentic, like, how do we get to be who we really want to be and feel really good and content where we are right now today?
You just closed the loop. I think you answered your question from earlier, like, where's the power in being a vessel of consciousness? I think that is the power. The power is, because we have a subjective idea of what the world is like for each person, like, we have the power to show up to whatever it is that is going on in the world and in our life. Like, we have the ability to choose how we interface with that and then what we do with that. You know what I mean? And that's the power. And like, the moment we start offloading and offshoring like that responsibility, as opposed to going to therapy, as opposed to like doing all the things you just described, that like finding those internal senses of value, the moment we start to offshore significant amounts of that to other things, we're giving that power away to other things. And sometimes, you know, I'm not here to like talk down anybody or anything. Like, sometimes you need to do that. That's why we have things in place, because everybody doesn't have the same allotment in life in terms of like capacity to interface. Some people's lives are very chaotic. You know what I'm saying? So like, sometimes you do need to offer.
There are seasons where I'm like, all I've got right now is the ability to make a drink. I know that that's not healthy, but during COVID, during lockdown, 100%. Like when it was like day 22 and I at home with the kids and we're all afraid and what, it's like, all right, fuck it. I'm making a drink. That's all I got right now.
100%.
I just like Zoomed, had a cocktail party with my friends and you were DJing. We'd all get on Instagram and watch you DJ. None of us knew what was going on. That's all the capacity we had. When you have little, you know, bits, little space, little moments where you're like, okay, I've got a little bit more capacity. I've got the energy. I've got the space. Or maybe even I need to fight for this space because I know I've got to heal this stuff. I've got to break these generational cycles. Like, that's the work. That's why we're here. And I think we've had this long, beautiful conversation. And I love the example of this again, pulling it back into the idea of tour. I feel like, first of all, this is not what we're talking about at tour. If anyone's like, am I about to go up to Charleston and these two are going to be up there? No, it's not. I promise it's not that.
There will
be
much more dancing than long-winded conversations.
Dancing, lots of like, what are your goals? What's going on with your heart? But what I think is beautiful about our conversation is like, there is not an obvious reason why anyone would look at you and I and be like, yeah, those guys are friends.
It's the beauty of it, man.
That is the beauty of it. We come from such different worlds. We're such different people. And we always have the best time when we're together because I think we both possess this like open heart about curiosity. Mm-hmm. Who are people? What are they about? How can we connect? How are we growing? How are we going deeper? That is what this tour is. Like, it is a chance to experience people who are not like you, but have some things. Like, we all have things in common that we're all like trying to become a better version of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of our community is that someone in that audience is an entrepreneur. Someone is the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Yep. Someone is a stay-at-home mama. Someone mm-hmm. is a struggling actor. Like, there's every kind of person, mm-hmm. man, woman, they, she, him, everybody's in that community. And what aligns us is this curiosity and this desire to want something more out of life. So, how the hell are you, man? What's going on?
I'm well. I'm getting settled into a new apartment, actually.
Whereabouts?
I'm in Hollywood, kind of near like Paramount Studios, off of like Melrose. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to live just past Melrose on, past Vine, like in that area where I was like, and this was... more than that. I have a 15-year-old. So let's say 18 years ago. So okay. I definitely at any moment felt like I was going to be murdered because it was such a dangerous neighborhood at the time. Yeah. But rent, it was a 2-bedroom apartment for $1,000. And back then, $500 a piece, that was gold.
Yeah, that's crazy. You were living the dream.
I really was. Is this your first time in Hollywood?
This is my first time living in Hollywood, yeah.
Now, did you move there, like roommate, girlfriend? What's your vibe? What's happening in your life
right
now?
Yeah. So I was in a relationship for a while. That ended a few months ago now, like 3 months ago.
Whoa. Do you want to talk about this or no?
Sure. We can. Yeah.
You guys were together for a long time.
Yeah. Like 5 years.
Holy crap. Yeah. How does that feel? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm of two minds about it, which I think is normal. I think the hardest part of going through that transition, like I have to tell you, but the hardest part about going through that transition was, you know, the uncoupling process. Like, we were living together for a while and like had, you know, a life together and a pet together and all of that stuff. So undoing that situation was, the most emotionally daunting part of it. But I think we had some, the reason we split up is because we had some, like, I would call them personality incongruencies. Like, I feel like we came to a point, I think a year and a half ago, maybe, where we started to feel like we just weren't the type of people each other needed at the time that we were at. And we spent about, I will say, like a year, like a solid year, like really trying to mitigate those things and trying to make them work. But like, I think we both got to a point because of where we're at kind of in life over the past year. Like, I went through a lot of like transitions career wise and like had a lot of opportunities in front of me and like was really like focusing hard and spending a lot of energy on that kind of stuff. As well as like, I started going to therapy for like the first time in my life a year and a half ago. And
incredible.
So, yeah. And so,
so good.
Yeah. It's been amazing. But like, doing all of that self-work and like, and going through all the transition and stuff that I was going through, I think we both got to a place where like, we were giving so much to what we were trying to like become individually that like, we didn't have a whole lot left over to like pour into like trying to make some very important incongruencies congruent. And we just both kind of got tired and we were like,
Yeah. Well, and it's also, I mean, this is the thing that I don't think people get or that people don't want to hear because it's so countercultural to the way, you know, you were raised in the church, right?
I was, yeah.
Yeah. So being raised in the church is so countercultural to what we were taught, which was like you would essentially meet someone when you were, you know, 18 years old and then you would just be with them until you forever. Were 100 and that's how it would be.
Yeah.
And what I it's such a beautiful idea, but all respect to that narrative.
Yeah.
I don't think that holds any space for the evolution of us as human beings.
Yeah.
Because if you grow and change as human beings, you are a different person than the 18-year-old that met them or the version of you 5 years ago. And who, this happens with friends, this happens with houses, apartments, jobs, like all of it, where you just, like when you came in, you were at a certain vibrational level. Mm-hmm. And over time, hopefully, because you're evolving, you grow to a different level. And if you're not growing to the same place or the same values, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's going to make for a, like you said, incongruencies. Like, it's just going to make for something that's more tension than flow. And the older I get, the more I want to be in states of flow where, I mean, literally, like, the cover of my phone or the wallpaper of my phone right now says, find more power in riding the waves than trying to control them.
Yeah, I like that.
This is where I'm going, is like, I want to like learn to not constantly be the salmon that's swimming upstream. I have a friend who has a vacation house. Whenever she's not staying there on vacation, which is pretty often because she's a mama with kids who works in a totally different city, she rents that house out on Airbnb, and she has absolutely loved the process. It's a way for her family to thrive both by having a place to go to and by getting additional income. And it's been super easy for her to manage because she does everything online. While you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle, and it's a great way to earn some extra money, just like my friend. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Guys, no two listeners of the show are exactly alike, which means that no two vacations you take are going to be exactly alike either. And if you're looking for a place that will serve all of you, Texas has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities that allow for an infinite number of different travel experiences. I love Texas so much, I moved my family there for 5 years. Because here's the deal, Texas has it all. Are you a beach person? We got you. If you love a rugged vacation, not my jam, but there's plenty of campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. My favorite part about Texas? The food. It is the thing I miss the absolute most. Whether you love barbecue or Tex-Mex, or just want to be in cities that take their food very seriously, you can enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters, yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own.
As people, we have an intuition about change, and we have an intuition about, like, with most things in life, we have an intuition about, like, yeah, the evolution of things, the growth of things, things becoming different. With relationships, we've really romanticized the idea of, like, committing to that for life no matter what. And I think that is counterintuitive to, like, most of what we do as human beings.
Right.
It's really kind of the only thing that we romanticize committing to for life. Even with, like, children, we don't commit necessarily to our relationship with our children being the same for the entire life. That's crazy to
You're
me.
You're so right. Well, and I remember when I was going through the divorce, I was reading so many books. Obviously, this is, like, how I try and teach myself or heal myself. And I was reading so many books. And I remember one of the books I read was talking about, why do we celebrate the amount of time that you're in a relationship? Like, you see a couple and you're like, you know, they're celebrating the 40th anniversary and everyone, like, cheers for them or whatever. It doesn't matter to the people cheering, like, if those were 40 good years or, you know, two of them were great, 38 were terrible. We celebrate the longevity instead of celebrating the quality. Yeah. And then there's this sort of, I don't know, why do you think, because I feel like people are afraid of the idea. And I was this way too. I remember hearing about celebrities like, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow and what's his face? Consciously uncoupled.
The guy from
Coldplay.
Coldplay. Yeah, Chris Martin.
Yeah, they consciously uncoupled or whatever. And I was just like, oh, you know, again, this sort of Christian church narrative of, like, how dare you break up? And how could you try and say that that was evolved? And in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, that's really freaking, yeah. That it is, and it's so controversial. I already can hear the emails that we're going to get from people just like, how dare you?
I know.
The sanctity of marriage. But it is beautiful if you're growing together, you're changing together, and the new version of who you are continues to be aligned with the new version of who they are.
Yeah.
If it isn't that, it's what? Like, it's toxic? I don't know.
I think a good way to illustrate it is like, it's the difference between telling someone like, oh, I've, you know, we've been married for 40 years, right? Like, there's an immediate, like, need to affirm somebody's, like, willingness to be married for 40 years to the same person. And regardless, and like you said, they don't even, there's no, almost no thought to like, well, have those been 40 pleasant years? Like, has there been any growth in those 40 years? Like, none of those questions come up. But if someone was like, I've been at the same job for 40 years, you might have the same urge to celebrate them. But on the flip side, if they told you, hey, I've been at the same job for 40 years and it's just not serving me and serving my growth the way that I want it to anymore. And so I'm going to like find a different situation that for the season and the person that I am now, there would be an immediate celebration of that and almost like, no, well, I mean, you kind of committed to being at this job, so you should probably. Right.
You stood up in front of your family and your grandma and you said you were going to have this job forever. and sorry, you're locked in.
So there's like, I think what it is people have this like foundational fear of being alone. I think there's two versions of that. The raw sort of animal sense of like, you want to have a partner and companionship. We've been conditioned over like generations to want that. I think people are just a lot of times afraid to be alone for less desirable reasons. I think a lot of times people are afraid to be alone because they don't want to have to be alone with themselves. And I think a lot of times people project that onto the rest of society. And so like, you know, a lot of that comes with, you know, judgment about marriage and stuff like that. And look, I'm not opposed to lifetime commitments if that's something that someone wants to do. But I don't think that whether it's a commitment to be in a committed, legally recognized relationship with someone, or if it's a commitment to, you know, doing yoga, or a commitment to having a particular career or a particular hobby, like, I don't think that there's anything worth sacrificing future moments of showing up to yourself and your situation honestly. That's like, I don't think there's anything that's worth putting a lifetime commitment of consistency as the sort of validation of that thing over like the potential of showing up one day dishonestly or unhappy to something. It's right, like, I think, it's all about sort of perspective and how you think of your future existence. If you think of your future existence in contrast to where you are now, okay, that's one way to look at it. But I think you're ultimately fighting an uphill battle. And this is all like kind of coming back to mindfulness, sort of being in the moment and like thinking of yourself as having future moments and setting yourself up with the commitments that you make now to like be able to show up well in the future. Like in a moment to moment basis, I think is important. And like no lifetime commitment, I think, is worth sacrificing that. You know what I mean? If those issues arise.
Well, I mean, I think it's going back to sort of what was the intention at the beginning of that. Your relationship in my past relationship, the intention was pure and honest and like, this is what we're doing. And in both of our cases, it sounds like getting to a point where you realize something was not working or not right anymore and trying harder and doubling down and what can we do and let's unpack this and all those things. But if you've honestly done what you can do to make this thing work, but you know in your heart of hearts that it's just not right, I think most people will stay inside of something because they don't want to be the bad guy, because they don't want to hurt this person that they love, because they don't want the opinions of other people to come at them. And it's a really, like, without question, the most difficult decision I've ever made, the hardest time period, like not even done yet, like still a hard time period. And I wouldn't trade it for anything because it was the right decision for me. And I think that gets so much flack, especially for women, because you're not supposed to make a choice like that. That is not a societal norm for a woman to decide, like, you know what? this isn't mm-hmm. the right thing. I don't feel like this is healthy for me. And if it's not healthy for me, it cannot be healthy for my children. And so I'm going to make this decision in spite of what other people think of it and be willing to deal with all of the fallout that comes from that. Because even in the shit, mm-hmm. even in like the process of walking through hell, mm-hmm. it's still better because at least it's honest.
Yeah, it's honest and it's compassionate to, I think, both people in the situation and the relationship. Because if you truly love someone that you're in a relationship with and you are unhappy in said relationship, like I feel like you should want the other person to be in a relationship where their partner is showing up to it honestly, right. authentically, and that goes both ways, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. 100%. Are you even thinking about someday when you date again? Is that scary? Is that, because when I broke up, I was like, I will never talk to, I don't even want to see another man. Like, F all this, screw love. Like, I wasn't making a decision because I wanted someone else. I was making a decision because I wanted to choose myself.
Yeah, I hear you. Where I'm at now is like the idea of a sort of a committed relationship that's leaning towards a lifetime commitment is something that like I'm not particular that idea right now with where I'm sitting does not sound great. Because I honestly am in a place right now where like I'm rethinking like what do relationships look like? What purpose should relationships serve? I think as a society, and let's just talk about like just Western culture, I guess. But as a society, you know, the sort of the typical Western idea of marriage, like I think there's a lot of institutions and things that we participate in because they have served the greater good of the collective of society for so long. For us to do that and we do it sort of out of like tradition and because it's like been meaningful in the past. But I feel like we've gotten to a point where like, and I think this should be a constant thing. I don't think it should happen one time in 2022 because people are unhappy in their relationships. But I think that like with anything that we do out of tradition or out of like collectively as like a sort of an institutionalized thing, I feel like we should ask ourselves like, is this still serving us? Like, what is the purpose of this? Do we still need to adhere to these particular norms in order to get the same positive downstream effects that they once had? And I just don't know about, like, I can completely understand where, like, a lifetime commitment to one person in a relationship is extremely serving to the larger community and, like, is worth in order for the propagation of the species, is worth for everyone, like, to, or, like, at least the majority of people to, like, engage in that experiment or into that idea or that concept. But like, I don't know if it is now. Like I'm at the point where like I'm rethinking like all of that, what that means and like,
right.
You know, and I love companionship. I'm the type of person who like, I love being with people. I love companionship. I love hanging out. I love going to Korean barbecue and like stuffing my face with someone and talking, you know, having great conversation. Like I love all of that. Like I love sex. I love all of that stuff. But within the context of like a lifetime commitment, I'm just not sure that is like, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know how I feel about it yet, yeah, honestly.
And that's great. That's honestly, that's a beautiful place to be is like, I'm not sure. I don't know what it's going to look like. Yeah. And I feel like that continues to evolve for me. Even the growing up and everything was about this idea of getting married.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first started dating Kez, I was like, oh, wait, do we have to get married? Like, if I want to be with this person, are we supposed to get married? Because you know the culture that we come from. Like, that's so ingrained in my head. And I actually think it's so beautiful to be in a relationship where both of us are choosing to be here.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot express enough how this is not everybody's story, but that when you're in a really long-term marriage, it starts to feel a bit like we're here because we married each other.
Right.
And the idea that both of us are here and we're in this thing because we choose to be, like every day I wake up and I choose you, and every day he wakes up and he's like, I choose you, and we're doing this thing together.
Yeah.
I just is so beautiful and is so different than how I was raised to believe a relationship was supposed to be. And I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if you're in your 80s and you're like, I'm still here choosing you. Like, there's no contract that says I have to be here. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, none of that is there. Mm-hmm. It's just this choice. It's like Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell. I mean, this is, or Oprah and Stedman. Like, mm-hmm. they all had it figured out and we're, none of the rest of us did. Do you remember how old are you?
I'm 31.
31. Okay, uh-huh. So I'm a little older and I don't even know if this is going to translate, but do you remember how, like, in the 90s, 2000s, like, the fact that Oprah and Stedman weren't married, the fact that Kurt and Goldie weren't married, it was so controversial.
Yeah.
Like, these people had been together for, like, 40 years or 30 years or 20 years, mm-hmm. and it was so crazy. It was such a, like, oh, my God, Hollywood's mad. Hollywood's just wild that people could be together and not be married.
And you know what's crazy is, like, yeah, I think there is something specifically about them being, I mean, I'm assuming they're monogamous, but I think there's something about them being monogamous and not married that ruffles people's feathers more than if they were non-monogamous and not married.
You're
which
right.
is insane
Why
to me.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think we've romanticized the idea of marriage so that more people do it. Marriage to me is a lot like college. Like, we've romanticized the idea of going to college because we want more people to go to college. We want people to be educated. And we've done that with marriage because if we're going to be honest about marriage as an institution, it really does make certain things easier, especially for young people. Like, if I'm, you know, in my mid-20s and I want to go buy a house, right? It becomes much easier, even if I'm just trying to rent a place, it becomes much easier if I have two incomes attached to my name. Becomes, you know, there are all kinds of tax incentives when you start having kids. If I want to just raise a kid, a lot of times it's much easier with two people around. Like, I think there's, like, there's these, like, concrete advantages to being married that I think serve people when they're, especially when they're younger, when they're trying to establish themselves. But I think there's nothing wrong with, like, when you get, like, acknowledging the reality of that, because as we, I think we're starting to do now with higher education, is like, we're looking, it's like, well, maybe everybody doesn't need to go to college.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean?
Beans has this great joke that she mm-hmm. always talks about, because her and Sammy don't want to have kids. Mm-hmm. And her joke is always that people are like, when are you guys going to have kids? You should have kids. Why don't you want to have kids? But she's like, you just spent 30 minutes telling me how terrible it is mm-hmm. to be a parent. Yeah. Nothing about what you just described would make me want to have a child.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, but it's great. It'll be different when it's your baby. And I feel like parenting is another one of those things yeah. that society tells us is for everyone. And it's not.
It's not for
everyone. It is not. It is like, I, as you know, I have four children.
Mm-hmm.
Here's this thing that I just had this epiphany yesterday, Hassan.
Mm-hmm.
My four kids, I got 15, 14, 10, and 5. My four kids do not care that I am parenting three other children. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They, in their mind, they are the only creature in the universe. It does not matter to them that mommy just spent the whole day shuttling one kid around for baseball, taking mm-hmm. care of a 5-year-old, helping the 9-year-old with a science project. Like, the 15-year-old, the second there's a free opening, Jackson's like, oh, mom, remember you said that you were going to help me with that thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, I am. That's right. And it's only taken me 15 years to realize yeah. they don't give a crap
yeah.
that you're tired. Mm-hmm. They don't care that you work full time. They don't care. Mm-hmm. Parenting is so damn hard. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Rewarding, amazing. I love my kids. So hard.
Mm-hmm.
And society would tell every single person, regardless of socioeconomic status, regardless of whether or not they're interested in it, regardless mm-hmm. of their emotional well-being, their mental health, regardless of any of it, like, mm-hmm. you got to have that baby, though. You got to have that baby.
Yeah.
It's like it's exactly what you're talking about, this idea that there are all of these things mm-hmm. that we've just always done. Well, it's the way it's always been done.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fall into a pattern or a rhythm or a process and just kind of follow and do what everyone else is doing. And I think what we're seeing, I feel like this happens in your 30s, and I'm super excited to head into my 40s. So I feel like that's about to be the decade. But I feel like you start to question a lot of the things yeah. that you used to believe
mm-hmm.
and that the older you get, the more you have the courage to voice those questions and go, yeah. wait a minute. I don't know if this is for me. And is that okay? Yeah. Like, am I allowed to be here if I right. don't want to do the things that you think I should be doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an important point. I've been saying this a lot, too. I think the reason I feel like we're seeing more separations and divorces of people over certain ages, like 40 and people even in their 50s, like I've seen a lot of that. I think the reason we're seeing that too is along the lines of what you just said. I think a lot with the rise of people going to therapy and doing self-work, I think a lot of times, especially for the generation like before us, like people who are now in their 50s and stuff like that, like they've never intentionally in a structured way, let's say, like done the kind of self-work and the self-analysis that you do in therapy. And so a lot of people are engaging in that and are now valuing and viewing their self differently. And so a lot of people are thinking about their relationships differently because for the first time, maybe in their lives, they're like considering what their experience of the world is now and like how that's being shaped by the relationships they're in and all that kind of stuff. And so people are for the first time, like looking at themselves and like continuing to better themselves into later ages. And I think that's why a lot of times, and not saying people getting divorced because they're better people, I'm saying people are getting divorced because I think they're realizing that like, you don't like life is not just a stagnant thing that you yeah. stop evolving at 25 and then you get married or whatever it is. Like, I think people are realizing that I'm a much different person and I could be a different person 5 years from now. And so I think people are taking a different look.
I have recently ordered plants online. I feel like we're living in 2054. It's so exciting. I ordered from Fast Growing Trees. No joke. I got a lemon tree and a snake plant. They delivered to my house. It was so exciting. And now both of them are planted. The snake plant is in my entryway, doing its thing, filtering the air. The lemon tree is in a pot in the backyard. I'm very excited to see what happens. Whatever you're interested in, Fast Growing Trees has it for you. And that includes organic, which I really care about, things that are sourced in the right way. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days, along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners of my show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code RACH at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code RACH at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code RACH. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Okay, true story, real confession. One of my favorite things in life is researching and trying out new healthy snacks. I literally spent like an hour and a half last week researching soybeans. It's real. But what I love is a place like Thrive Market, where I can look for snacks. I can also look for pantry essentials and things to go in my fridge. And I can trust that whatever is on their website is going to be good for me, sourced from great places, have real ingredients, organic, non-GMO. It's like shopping with a friend who's already curated things I want to eat. So one of my favorite discoveries in the last couple of years is Hue chocolate. Have you guys had this yet? It's so good. It's like that square of dark chocolate that I have every single night with my tea makes me so happy. One of the cool things about Thrive is that they have these filters on the website too. So if you have a certain way of eating or dietary restrictions, you can filter the site so it only shows you products within that category. You should totally check it out if you haven't already. You can save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/rach for 30% off your first order. 30% off plus a free $60 gift. That's Thrive market.com/rach. 30% off plus a free $60 gift. ThriveMarket.com/rach. Try the Hue.
Okay. not for nothing, but we're living longer than ever.
For sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's not abnormal now to expect to live to 80, 90, even 100. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, it used to be, if you were 40, you're middle-aged.
Right.
If you're 40 now, mm-hmm. do you have 50 more years? Mm-hmm. Do you have more years left on this earth than you've even lived so far? Yeah. With more access and resources and information and wisdom and all of that stuff at your fingertips, I hope that we're making decisions that sort of shake ourself and ask what we're doing and why we're doing it. And this makes me think of a question that I feel like you absolutely have an opinion on.
Okay.
Which is this idea of like being in the matrix or being in a simulation.
Yes.
What is your belief about the simulation?
I think it's perfectly plausible to conclude that we're living in some kind of simulation that's being ran by some other entity or consciousness or some other intelligence out there. I think that I think...
Wait, let me tell you. So I was just talking, you know my friend Tom Bilyeu? You've seen
yes.
him speak at Rise before. 100%. So I was talking to Tom about this, and you know Tom has some crazy ass perception.
Yeah.
And he said, he was talking so fast I could barely keep up with what he was saying. But here's like the nugget that I mm-hmm. took out of it, was he was like, if you could just conceive of the fact that this could be a simulation, then mm-hmm. you have to also accept the fact that there's no way this is the first one.
Yeah. It's true.
So are you actually a simulation of a simulation of a simulation?
It's true. I mean, I think the foundation of, and Tom can come back on and correct me, but I think the foundation of like simulation theory is like, if we can conceive of, like, we're at a place in our culture right now in technology wise, where like, we're able to create simulations that are pretty, you know, pretty good, but like we can all imagine a place where the simulations become so good that we can't distinguish it from like what we consider reality and not reality. So who's to say we're not already at that point and just don't realize it? Totally. I'm totally on board.
I just had this conversation with Jackson last night because I was trying to explain to him. I have such a, not a fear, but I have such a trepidation, I guess, about the future of social media, the future of VR, what this does, not to me, right? Because I grew up as a child, I didn't have the internet. I didn't have social media. I didn't have a phone till I was like 19.
Yeah.
So my kids have only known this world. And I talked to them about a lot. Like, do you understand that none of this is real? And all of this is an algorithm, meaning like when you're going on social media, this is an algorithm that is being set up. Even Google, what you would Google and find, if you and I Google the same thing, me in Texas and you in Los Angeles, it's going to autofill with different options based on where we're living in the country, the conservative or liberal state of the world around us. And that is terrifying for teenagers, like because of what it looks like now. But what I'm freaked out about is what does it look like 10 years from now? Like right now with VR, right? You got to put on a headset. You're like, whoa, this is like kind of trippy. Mm-hmm. What's it going to be like when you can pop in contacts or when people don't even know that you're, you know, Ready Player One or whatever? Mm-hmm. Like, I know I sound crazy right now.
No, you don't at all.
I'm so worried for our kids. I think, God.
Yeah. Well, I think, so here's why that idea doesn't totally frighten me. So I'm trying to think of the world in more of like a, like without the self, like without the lens of the self, because I'm getting to the point now, I've been listening to so much Sam Harris that like, I think that like, I've come to conclude that the self, the idea of the self is an illusion.
Self meaning like the way that we perceive who we perceive ourselves.
Yeah. Self meaning like the, there is a social concept that is Rachel Hollis. There's a social concept that is Asan, but that doesn't have any bearing on like what the collection of thoughts and memories are that we call Rachel is. Like you are a collection of thoughts and memories, and you are a conscious experience of like existing, right? If we're able to like, if we're able to just for this thought experiment, like step aside from the idea of there is a being inside of who we call Rachel Hollis that is like a transcendent like entity. If we remove that idea and we just concede that
your
you are
soul, is that what you would call
your soul? Yeah. If we concede that you don't have a soul and that you are a collection of all your thoughts and memories and how you were raised and all that kind of stuff, what is a simulation? I think gives it sort of like an artificial name. So like, what if we just called it like anything, like experience? Say we just call it an experience, right? If you have a virtual experience, like on a video game or something like that, what happens? You turn on, like from the perspective of the characters in the game, they pop into existence. They're conscious at whatever level that they're conscious at. Let's just concede that there's some level of consciousness there. And then when it's done, like when the experience is over, they are not conscious anymore and the experience ends. How is that any different from life as we know it?
Damn, you're so right.
It's not at all. I think when we say simulation, we sort of read into it that it's some kind of like technological thing that's being run by
like
some other person or entity
controlling the world. Yes.
Yeah. No. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that. I mean, what we are literally is, you know, we are a consciousness having an experience of the rest of the universe for the time that we have, and then we're not conscious of that experience anymore. I think we're just playing a language game.
Yeah. What's the power in like, if you think of it that way, if you think of it as this reality is a creation of your own making, right? Mm-hmm. It's the experiences you've had. It's the way that you were raised. It's what you perceive that to be. You and I could have the exact same experience and you could perceive it as the best day of your life and I could perceive it as the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. So that can shift in a moment. Like, I think we've all gone through something where something great happens, something horrible happens, and it changes, like the world tilts on its axis and suddenly the experience or the simulation becomes something else entirely. Mm-hmm. So I love the idea that like, if you think of it as a video game or if you think of it as anything, how does that give us power of this moment? It's kind of going back to that idea of like not buying into the way that we have always done things. So I was just watching the documentary on Netflix called Coded Bias that I was tripping out at, and you should totally watch if you haven't seen. So have you seen it?
I have not. It sounds great though. It sounds like it's up my alley.
Yeah, it totally is. But it essentially starts with the concept that people believe that the algorithm or computers or artificial intelligence is like the greatest equalizer because it's just math, right? That there's no bias inside of math. The problem is that the bias is created by the code because the code was created by a person who had inherent bias in themselves. So whether they meant to or not, the only way that AI can learn is that you give it a bunch of information and then it's learning as it goes. So for instance, at the beginning of this documentary, there's this woman telling the story of, she's like so badass, I can't even handle it. But she's at some really fancy school, like Harvard or Stanford or MIT or something. And one of the classes she's taking is that you go to a science fiction book, like a famous science fiction book, and you find something that they describe in the science fiction book, and then you have to actually invent it.
Oh, wow.
Which is the craziest, most amazing class ever.
Yeah.
And so she decides to make a mirror that if you look into it, it could augment your face and turn you into Serena Williams or a lion or something. Basically that you could like hype yourself up by talking to yourself in the mirror, but that you would become your hero. And so in order to build this mirror, she does it. It's so cool. But she needed facial recognition software in order to like complete the project. So she gets the software set up, she looks into the mirror, and it's important to say she's a black woman. She looks into the mirror, and the screen comes up and says, no face detected. And she's like, what? And so she keeps trying, and she's like, did I set this up wrong? Is the lighting in the room funny? Like, she can't figure out what's going on. And then, just on a whim, she grabs like a white mask, like the kind that you'd use for like theater or something, just like a plain white mask, and puts it up, and immediately it's like face detected because the facial recognition software did not recognize her face as a black woman because the technology that was used to create it, and this was like Amazon or Google, like it was a major company who built this, had used pictures of white men as a the thing that taught AI to recognize faces.
Yeah.
So that's how the documentary starts. And it's talking about how dangerous it is to believe that our technology is unbiased, because of course it obviously is.
Right.
But then it grows to like how all of these countries, how China, how London, how America is now using facial recognition software to track people, to follow you down the street, mm-hmm. to find, you know, people who are committing crimes. And it honestly, for you, Asan, for anyone listening, because if people are still with us, because mm-hmm. this conversation has gone to some crazy places.
Totally fine with it.
Honestly, this doc is wild, and it like is kind of terrifying, because you're like, oh, yeah. We're sheep.
Yeah.
We're totally sheep. Like, we're letting our liberties be taken away. Mm-hmm. We're agreeing to this. Nobody's bothered that this stuff is happening. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but I highly recommend that one.
I think it's a good point, and I think it connects to the original point you were making about like what power do we have then if we are a conscious experience. Like, the uniqueness of being human, as far as we can tell, because as far as we can tell, we're the only animals on Earth that have the level of subjective conscious experience that we have. The beauty, and we can communicate that to other people. And I think the beauty of being human is that we are both, if we're going to continue the analogy of like a simulation or a computer program or a video game, if we as human beings are both the subjects that of the experiment or of the game or of the things that are subjected to the algorithm, and we are also the creators of the algorithm. Yep. And I think what you're arguing for with like the facial recognition software not recognizing certain hues of skin color or whatever it is, you're arguing for more data input. You're arguing for more, like what that algorithm needed was the experience of more things beyond what it had already experienced. And that translates in analogy to community. Like what makes us unique, even if there was if there was no human beings on Earth, but there was one animal that had the consciousness of a human being, if you think about it long enough, that's like torture, because you're having an experience that you cannot share with anybody else. I think that's like the things that make us special as humans is not only our ability to have a subjective experience of the world, but to share that with others, because that's mm-hmm. really the project of what we're all here to do. Because if there's a subjective experience of what it's like to be what we call Asan, and there's a different subjective experience of what it means to be Rachel, like we, as knowing what it's like to suffer and knowing what it's like to flourish as a consciousness, like we have the duty to promote that amongst each other. Like, I want all consciousness to flourish as my own. I think that's what, I mean, that's the concept of love that we have, you know, like the idea of like, if we want to take it to church, the idea of like agape love, this idea of selfless love is recognizing the experience of others as your own and connecting mm-hmm. to that. And it's not just out of altruism to say, hey, I did a good job today by recognizing someone else. It literally is part of the foundation of the project, because if we're going to, the algorithm of people, the algorithm that governs people in like in our interactions is what we call culture. It's all of the norms, all of the things that we buy into, marriage, dating, all of that, food, travel, all of that, experiences, all of that is culture. And if we're not constantly feeding our like the code of the algorithm that's running through our in particular programming, we're setting ourselves up to not see as many faces as there are that exist. So we owe it to ourselves to experience people, experience other consciousnesses, and to build community. Like, community is the foundation of what we owe to ourselves by having a conscious experience of the universe. Because we don't have the capacity to do it all on our own. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you feel like you've always believed that, like always had that belief about community, or do you feel like that's something that you've grown into?
I think the language that I've used to describe it is obviously I've learned recently, but I think within all of us, I think there is that sense. I think you have to do work to unearth that and to make it like, and to water those plants, because like, I think a lot of times in the interest of sort of individual prosperity and in the interest of like efficiency at a societal level, I think a lot of times, though, like the idea of community and things like that, and all the things we're talking about, can be very easily, you can get distracted from. And I think those can become like, those kinds of thoughts can become dormant because it's much easier oftentimes to just think selfishly. Because that's also coded in us is to at a biological level.
Yeah, that's
human. 100%. Yeah, is to be selfish. Yeah.
There's that old quote that says, we don't see life as it is. We see life as we are.
Yeah.
Like we see it through our specific lens. I'm so excited to hang out with you in person. I'm excited to travel with you.
Yeah.
We're about to travel around this country. That feels fun.
Yeah.
But I want to tell anybody listening who wants to grab their tickets, we kick off our first city is Birmingham, Alabama on September 30th. We're about 3 weeks away. You can go to Rach Talk Live to grab your tickets. Come hang out with me and Asan. We're going to dream big. We're going to set some goals for ourselves. We're going to find community. It's going to be sick. And I love hanging out with you. I could talk to you forever.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it.
You have to come back. Let's do it again.
Absolutely.
The Rachel Hollis Podcast is produced by me, Rachel Hollis. It's edited by Andrew Weller and Jack Noble.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.